GoDaddy.com. Use the code BLU139 to get 10% off any combination of purchases at GoDaddy.com. See site for details. Get your piece of the internet at GoDaddy.com. Tango Tango Papa 1321, April 18, 2010.
Have we seen the actual reality of a monstrous crime? Or merely an illusion, the product of a tortured brain?
Of course, that's Bach, and don't ask me what the name, I can't pronounce the, it's in, I think this is in German, so if you're curious about what it is, I'll, you know, let me know, and I'll tell you what, I'll email you what the name of it. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, Tom Wiles here with you, coming to you once again from guess where, Columbus, Ohio. There was no podcast last night. I had intended to record a podcast, but let me back up a little bit. I had night before last, I had unloaded in Maryland, and then I spent the night there at that, it's kind of a service area along Interstate 95 there in the northern part of Maryland. And so the next day, the next afternoon, that would have been yesterday afternoon, Friday afternoon, I picked a load up at Joppa, Maryland, that was going to Mount Vernon, Illinois. And so in the meantime, after I picked the load up, one of the dispatchers sent a message saying that there was this driver that needed to get home, and they were wondering if I would swap with him at Columbus, Ohio. And I said, yeah, sure, I didn't care. And so today, you know, that I never did hear back from the night dispatcher. And then today, they sent another message. The daytime people come in on Saturday sometimes, or at least one daytime person comes in on Saturday morning. And they, kind of to make a long story short, they set it up so that I would come to Columbus. So anyway, last night I spent the night in western Maryland along Interstate 68 at this truck stop. And it turns out, you know, at one time, there was no, you know, when I just had a Sprint air card, there was no air card service. There was no data service there at all. And then, but now, you would think by now, because that Interstate 68 is a fairly busy freeway, now they have 1X service. And that's true on both Verizon and Sprint. So they're probably connecting to the same tower. So in any case, I just didn't feel like I had enough bandwidth to upload from there. You know, it would have probably worked, but it would have been very slow. And so I just went ahead and spent the night there, and then got up today, and then I found out that I was going to go ahead and come to Columbus, and so that's what I did. And now, you know, so I've dropped the trailer here at this company, at the company yard, and then this other driver's coming sometime on Sunday, and he'll bring his load. Now, the load that I'm swapping for delivers early Monday afternoon somewhere down in Kentucky, and I think it's about 230 miles from here. So in the meantime, I'm back at Columbus, and so I told them, you know, hey, you worked on my truck the other day, and since you worked on the truck, the air conditioner isn't working. And so, you know, I wrote it up, and so hopefully sometime Sunday they'll work on it. And maybe, you know, maybe it's just something simple, maybe something's unplugged, you know. But, you know, things can go wrong. So in any case, hopefully they'll get that fixed, and I'll have an air conditioner again. Now, I didn't need it today. Last night when I stopped there in western Maryland, it was really, you know, raining and blowing, and kind of a cold rain. And it got fairly chilly overnight, probably down into the 40s. And then today wasn't much better. It was, I think at one point I saw it was like 45 degrees, I think, when I was around Wheeling, West Virginia, and then, you know, and then it was kind of in the 50s, and I think it's probably, I'm guessing it's probably in the upper 40s here in Columbus tonight. So it's kind of chilly, but that's not going to last long. You know, so I have to get, I want to do my best to get the thing fixed. So, you know, because it is going to get hot, and it's going to get, it will get unbearably hot. So, it's just a matter of time. So, got to have it. So, hopefully, you know, I have enough time. They'll be able to do that tomorrow, and then I can go ahead and head for Kentucky. And, you know, even if I had to get up early Monday morning and leave, it would, you know, that would still work, so. But now, tonight, I got all my stuff out and went to plug my microphone in, and I can't get the thing to connect. And I think what has happened, I think a piece fell out of it, out of the bottom of the XLR connector on the microphone itself, and you know, if, because I think there's a missing piece, but I don't know where it went. It would have to be here in the truck somewhere, you know. So I, you know, I may have to dig around and see if I can find it, or when I get home again, either send it off to Heil to be repaired, or maybe take it to a music store and maybe they have some parts, you know, that would, because it's a standard XLR connector. But it, you know, I do seem to have some you know, there's a missing part, and so you plug the cable in the bottom of it, and it just doesn't connect. So what I'm using, of course, I have this H2, the Zoom H2, and one of the functionalities that it has, it will also function as a sort of a, you know, it's got a little mixer functionality, so you plug it in and it goes into this mode where it functions as a mixer. And so I got my headphones plugged into it, and just, you know, don't have the, you don't even have to turn it on. It's powered through USB when you use it as a microphone, as a mixer. And it does seem to work okay. So at least, you know, I'm not having to use the internal microphone that's built into the computer, you know, because that one, you know, that's a lower quality microphone. This, the microphones that are included with this H2 are actually pretty decent. So, you know, they'll work in a pinch. And so at least I have a way of making it work. So I, but I don't know. I'll have to dig around. I, you know, if I dig around in here, I can probably find the missing part, because it should be just, I'm not exactly sure what it looks like, but it should just be a little round, kind of a round thing that kind of goes up in the base of the microphone, that forms part of the microphone's XLR connector. And, because I've, it went one time, it was loose, and I was able to tighten, you know, I was able to tighten the screw back up, and then I don't know, I think it probably, it, you know, over time it just vibrates loose, and then the part, I don't know, it's somewhere, but something's definitely missing, because, you know, I go to plug the XLR cable into the bottom of it, and it just, you know, it's not snapping in, and it's certainly not connecting. So oh well, I'll get it fixed one way or the other. And as I say, I've got this H2, so should I can still function. I've got a couple of pieces of audio, and this one I'm going to play first, it's actually kind of long. It's from Irk, that does, you know, you can find, Irk does a bunch of podcasts at channelirk.com. Irk is from Australia. And I probably, what I'm going to do, this is like 30 minutes long, and I'm probably going to just play certain parts of it, because it's, you know, it's really kind of too long. But it's kind of talking about, I listened to parts of it, I haven't listened to all of it, but it's talking about a truck crash on a northern Sydney, Australia freeway, and it kind of closed the road down for like 12 hours. And it really sounds kind of outrageous, because a lot of people were sort of trapped for about 12 hours because the road was shut down, and you know, and apparently until they actually cleaned the thing up, and then some outrageous things happened. So anyway, let's go ahead and listen to Irk. And again, Irk's podcasts, he does a bunch of them. They can be found at channelirk.com. So here is Irk.
Yesterday, being Monday as I record this on Tuesday, there was a major truck crash on the F3 freeway heading north out of Sydney between two trucks. One truck ran into the back of the other truck, and one of those trucks was a vegetable truck, and it ran into a fully loaded B double petrol tanker. The accident happened at 11:40 a.m. Now, the northbound traffic was banked up. Paramedics worked on the driver of the fruit truck. He was unfortunately trapped in the wreckage as it caught fire. Fire crews extinguished the blaze before it reached the tanker, but needless to say, they were on high alert. Petrol fumes were detected from a small leak in the rear tanker. The man who was returning from the fish markets was airlifted to Royal North Shore Hospital, where he remains in a critical condition. The tanker driver was uninjured. A 200-metre exclusion zone was established around the tanker before one northbound lane was reopened 2 hours later. Police were even ordering motorists seen smoking in their cars to extinguish their cigarettes as they slowly passed the wreckage. Now, common sense, now I know that sometimes common sense isn't too common, but if you are passing an accident scene, especially one that's caused major traffic hassles, and one involving a petrol tanker, who are these peanuts smoking in their cars as they are passing the scene? And they wonder why the police and the fire brigade close the roads, because it's people like that who are smoking as they're going past the site. But no one's mentioned that. No one's really mentioned that. A lot of people are focusing on the delays, and I can't blame them. The accident happened at 11:40 a.m. Now, what they've been doing on that F3 freeway is that there have been a lot of accidents over the time, and so the government has spent $28 million providing what they call contraflow procedures, which basically diverts the traffic from one direction to the other. So if you're going northbound and the accident's northbound, they close southbound traffic, they divert you to the southbound lanes, and then you go up past the accident and then back to the northbound lanes, and off you go, everyone's happy. But not on this occasion. It took between 11:40 a.m. and 8:30 p.m. for that to be implemented. Needless to say, there was a lot of people who were caught in this. Some people were even woken up by Roads and Traffic Authority officials after they fell asleep. Some truck drivers who were caught up in this particular incident, and we were talking up to possibly 12 hours where people were caught in this incident, truck drivers were fined because they were in their cabins for too long while they were not taking breaks, according to the people that fined them. So you're stuck behind an accident, you're not going anywhere, you haven't left the cab. According to the Roads and Traffic Authority, that's not a break, and so when you get to the heavy vehicle checking station up the road, you get fined.
Okay, now that is actually outrageous, and that's something actually I've never heard of happening in the United States. I've never, you know, of all the stories I've heard, and, you know, sometimes you hear that, you know, if you'll hear something and it's totally untrue, or it's someone will have, you know, there might be a grain of truth to it, and by the time it gets retold a number of times, it's kind of really exaggerated. And I've heard, you know, some really strange things over the years, but I've never heard of a state fining a driver for not taking a break, you know, because of a traffic tie-up. That's outrageous. That's outrageous. It's absolutely unreasonable. You know, what the hell are they supposed to do? What are those drivers supposed to do if you're trapped in your truck? You know, you can't leave the truck. You know, what are you going to do? Where are you going to go take a break at? You know, that's ridiculous. Now, because when you're in a tie-up like that, you really don't know, you don't have a clue how long it's going to be. You know, it's, you know, I've been in situations where I've been, you know, stopped for, I don't know, 3 or 4 hours. And I've, you know, and then, you know, I've been in other situations where, you know, it's just a few minutes. But when there's a, you know, if there's, now a lot of times, like on an, you know, like a typical, let's say it's a 4-lane kind of a rural interstate highway, they're really, you know, they can stop the traffic if the road is actually, you know, if the thing, you know, there's an accident that actually blocks, let's say it blocks one direction of travel, what they will typically do, they'll, you know, obviously that part of the road is closed, but then they, you know, they'll get backup help and they'll actually divert traffic off of the interstate, you know, and set up some sort of a detour. They'll, you know, but some people are going to be trapped, you know, unless they can, they're close enough to an exit where they can have them back up and actually get off. But just, you know, if you're out in a rural place somewhere, or even in a city, there's, you're not necessarily going to be able to just drive across the median to get to the other side, you know, because the roads really aren't set up to do that. So, you know, because you can't just drive through the median, or, you know, that has to be reinforced, you know, otherwise, you know, you'd have another disaster, you know, because if you try to drive through a grassy median or whatever, it might be muddy or something. So, especially if with a, you know, freeway full of traffic, that just wouldn't work. So, but that's outrageous. That's really ridiculous. I don't see how they can get away with that, because that's, you know, the roads, you know, the drivers are tied up, they're trapped in their vehicles. What the hell are they supposed to do? You know, how can the state, or, you know, how can the government come along and then say, oh, well, you didn't take your break. Well, I was trapped. Well, it doesn't matter. You didn't take your break. We want money. That's ridiculous. That is absolutely outrageous.
And so we're going to hear some media coverage of this. A lot of people were trapped in the cars for 5 to 6 hours. There was no food or water handed out to people. And there was a massive debacle. Lots of people very, very upset. At the moment, there's over 450 comments on the website that I'm reading the original story from. And what we're going to do is we're going to hear some various media reports with some very interesting comments in relation to this procedure. First of all, Sky News is going to give us a bit of an overview.
To deal with the aftermath of crashes on major thoroughfares, traffic on one of the country's busiest highways was at a standstill for more than 12 hours yesterday after a crash between a fuel tanker and a truck. After causing a traffic nightmare, the northbound lanes of the F3 linking Sydney and the Central Coast finally reopened very late last night.
12 hours after this crash, traffic finally started flowing after midnight. A vegetable truck ran up the back of a fuel tanker just before noon at Mount White on the F3. The driver was airlifted to Royal North Shore Hospital in a critical condition. All northbound lanes were shut down and traffic diverted to the Old Pacific Highway. But the cleanup was delayed when a tanker sent to empty 43,000 litres of petrol from the damaged B-double didn't have the right pump. By peak hour, traffic had banked up more than 12 kilometres.
The worst I've ever seen. I haven't seen anything like it all my life.
Drivers were left fuming.
This road is crap. It's been crap for years.
I think this really highlights the need for an alternate route to Newcastle, because it's like this frequently and it's really dangerous.
The F3 is the main link between Sydney, the Central Coast and Queensland, and has been plagued with accidents. The New South Wales government has funded a $28 million contraflow plan that's supposed to let vehicles move smoothly around an accident. But the RTA didn't open the contraflow until 9 p.m, 9 hours after the crash.
They couldn't organise a shield raffle. $28 million for contraflows, and look, we're still sitting here doing nothing.
Now, that was very strange, that last particular guy. How did... He was sitting in a car during this incident. How did he know that, you know, it was $28 million worth of improvements to the road? I don't know. Did the TV station tell him that it was $28 million worth of work? And they said, oh, we need someone to say that it was $28 million worth of work. And this bloke says, yeah, I'll do it. Maybe, maybe not. I don't know. So we'll move from that and we'll go to some listener reaction on ABC Sydney 702 this morning.
So I was caught yesterday. And I travel the M3 every day to go down to Sydney. And the amount of trucks that go down through here to go from north to south, it's enormous. And you know it's going to happen at some stages because, you know, you've got people moving around. But the government's got to really make some strategic decision on how they're going to move transport. Move to some sort of like transport nodes or something like that. Move it away from, you know, these populated areas that people are trying to move to get to work or improve public transport. The two options that they've got, no one's actually talking about it.
Thank you very much, Paul. Marguerite, your observations?
Yes, hi. Look, I'm just blown away. We came down and passed the accident on the way down to Sydney, travelling south. I rang the RTA about 5 o'clock, and I just want to know why. The excuse they gave me, I said, why isn't the contraflow in place? Because obviously it was a major disaster. And she told me in no uncertain terms there was a 10-kilometre legal limit for a contraflow, and also they didn't want traffic going past on the other side in the contraflow going past when they were unloading the petrol. Now, to me, it wasn't 10 kilometres, the contraflow, because we actually left Sydney about 10:30 last night to come home. Still got stuck in traffic. But also, there was traffic still travelling south going past when they were unloading petrol. So it just didn't make any sense to me.
Okay, thank you very much, Marguerite. Julia?
Oh, hi. I was stuck in that traffic yesterday. Sorry, I'm a bit hoarse this morning. And I rang the RTA, I rang the police, because I'm a diabetic and after being stuck in it for 5 hours, needed, you know, medication and stuff, and was given no advice. And we asked about the contraflow, and they then said they would consider it, but when they did open it at 8:20, they didn't open it, they blocked most of the access roads onto it, and it was as if somebody had rung up and said, let all the freight trucks go through. You know, when they started to pile up, and they just went right past us and on the contraflow, and we were still stuck there for about 2 hours.
And so that was from ABC Sydney 702 yesterday in relation to this particular incident. Let's have a look at some of the quote-unquote plans that the RTA have mentioned in relation to what they're trying to do. The F3 Freeway Emergency Traffic Management Plan. The F3 freeway carries in excess of 75,000 vehicles per day between Sydney and the Central Coast. It is the major route between Sydney and the Central Coast. The other detour route, which was previously mentioned, was the Pacific Highway that basically parallels the F3. But that particular road is only one lane in each direction, compared to three lanes in each direction on the F3. Now, what were the government doing about it? They funded a $28 million emergency traffic management plan to reduce the impact of these crashes. Features of the plan, quoting from the RTA website, included diverting traffic to the opposite side of the F3 during major incidents with a new contraplan flow, upgrading 17 crossover points and constructing 2 more crossover points to safely swap the traffic to the opposite side of the freeway, installing an additional 17 variable message signs on the freeway and major approach roads to provide information to motorists faster, adding an extra 7 traffic cameras to monitor the F3, which brings the total up to 29 live feeds to the Transport Management Centre of the RTA, providing a total of 5 live images of the F3 on the RTA website, arranging supplies of bottled water for distribution to stranded motorists in the event of extended delays. Well, that obviously didn't happen. establishing 8 additional storage depots with emergency traffic supplies such as traffic cones, barrier boards and oil absorbent to allow the contraflow arrangement to be implemented, and setting up an emergency hot desk at the Transport Management Centre to deal with incidents on the freeway. And so, according to the page at the moment, the current situation, and I don't know when this was updated, 21 crossovers are now available for use, and they were located between the interchanges at Wirunga and Tuggerah, with 4 more crossovers to be introduced progressively. The traffic supplies are being stored in temporary containers pending the construction of permanent garaging. The installation of variable message signs will continue into early 2010. Well, it is now April 2010. 14 message boards have been installed and are awaiting connection to utilities, with a further 3 variable message boards to be installed in the new year. So, obviously, this particular page hasn't been updated since late last year. So, I wonder if this page will get updated over the next couple of days. Interesting. There was a trial of the arrangements as they should have worked last night, but didn't. On November 2009, and there was also a previous training exercise on October 2008. But obviously it didn't happen last night.
Okay, let me interrupt once again. Now, probably my favorite state as far as the way they've got their roads set up, their freeways, and many of their, even their secondary major routes that are not interstate highways, that are not part of the interstate highway system, is Texas. And Texas, almost always on a 4-lane road, whether it's an interstate highway or just some other 4-lane road, they set up access roads. And that's true almost everywhere you go in Texas on a 4-lane road or a multi-lane freeway. They've got access roads set up, and a lot of times if there's a major accident and the road gets blocked, you know, one of the directions of travel gets completely blocked, they can divert traffic off onto the onto those access roads. There's an access road on either side of, usually one going one way, one going the other. Sometimes those access roads actually are two-way roads. But they almost always have access roads. There's very few places in Texas where you're on a 4-lane road, especially an interstate highway, that does not have access roads, even out in the middle of nowhere. You know, there's still access roads. And, you know, so Texas really has it set up well. Now, you'll see a few access roads in other states, but Texas has, you know, that's just part of the way they built the roads. And if they build a new road, there's always access roads. You know, when they build a new section of freeway or, you know, a new 4-lane road, there's always some access roads. And, but now in other states, when, you know, what they're describing there, obviously, Sydney is a city, you know, major city. It's kind of along the coast. And so when people, you know, they're going north out of there, there's the freeway, and then you've got that other road that you mentioned. You know, this is just a 2-lane road. That's, you know, the freeway obviously replaced it. It's a parallel, but, you know, it's kind of funny how you can end up with like a north-south type thing like that. And then you may have a secondary road, or, you know, now what's a secondary road that used to be the main road, kind of replaced by the freeway, and everything still goes north and south. There's no alternative, Now, one alternative that they could do, if that's a really busy road, you know, it's got six lanes going each way, they can add extra lanes, and sometimes that can help. Now, of course, if there's a major crash and you got fuel spillage, obviously that's going to close the road down. Now, they're so far, and what I've listened to, they haven't mentioned the traffic going south, you know, whether it got blocked off or not. You know, were they still letting those people go by south, even though there was a tanker truck that was involved in a major accident going north? Yeah, I'm curious about that. Because, if, you know, we'd think with a fuel, potential fuel explosions and what have you, that they would probably close the southbound down too. But apparently, that, you know, as I say, it seems to be just the northbound, at least from what I've heard so far. But you would think that at the very least they would immediately, you know, after they realized that the road was blocked, that they and what had happened, that they would just cut it off and say, hey, you can't, you have to get off here, you know, because, you know, and then the people that are there that are already up next to the accident and kind of trapped on the freeway, you know, they're just sort of trapped and there's not a whole lot that can be done. You know, if they're not implementing these other plans to reverse, you know, to be able to move the traffic over and, you know, into the southbound lanes, if they're not able to, you know, because they didn't implement that plan, even though they've spent some money making crossovers and what have you, somebody obviously just dropped the ball. You know, and that type of stuff happens. You know, I mean, government, you know, just government is inefficient. And, you know, and it kind of depends in large part, the reason government is inefficient, you know, and I can, it kind of goes back to, you know, what I've said about restaurants and any other business. You know, if you have a restaurant, let's say a mom-and-pop restaurant, chances are, you know, if mom-and-pop are really involved in running the, whatever the business is, it could be a restaurant or any kind of business, whoever originally built that business, if they're still involved in running it, chances are it's going to be run right and they're really going to try to do a good job and they're right there to monitor their employees. But the employees are, you know, if you just have somebody running it, mom and pop aren't involved anymore, and it's just employees, or it's a branch thing or a part of a franchise or something, and you don't have an owner that's really actively involved in it, then you end up with a situation where people just don't really care. And, of course, in the case of government workers, oftentimes, you know, they, most of the time, you end up in this situation where, you know, it's like as not, people just don't care. And so that often happens with highway departments. You know, I've seen that happen over and over and over again, where highway departments, yeah, they just really don't care all that much. And, I don't know, I can't tell you how many times I'm driving along, you know, and there's some county or, you know, it's county or state workers out there working on something, and it's especially true with county road department employees. The county road department employees are notorious for just kind of standing around, not doing anything, and, you have really kind of lazy people working for the county, you know, whatever, you know, and of course there's hundreds of counties in each state, and then, you know, depending on the size of the state, and then, you know, you can have, like Texas, you know, has got hundreds of counties, and then, you know, smaller states obviously have fewer counties, and there's thousands of counties across the country, but county workers or road workers are notoriously kind of known to be lazy and not do much, you know. Now, it just kind of depends on who is managing, you know, when there's an accident, when there's a major accident like that, who's managing it? You know, is it, you know, in the case, you know, in the case, you know, it kind of depends on which state, like in the United States, depends on which state, you know, is it the responsibility of the highway patrol, or is it the state highway patrol, or and then other agencies, you know, county sheriffs can get involved, and you have EMS people and so on and so forth, and somebody obviously has to take charge, you know, and make the stuff happen, you know, and I could see where there's an opportunity for nobody to really take charge and nobody kind of knows what's going on, and you end up with a disaster, you know, where it takes way longer than it should. And I don't know, once in a while, I haven't heard, you know, lately I really haven't heard of anything that, well, of course I quit listening to the news too. But I have, you know, back before podcasting and before even, you know, when I was forced to listen to local radio as I was driving around in my truck, I would occasionally, you know, I'd tune in. You know, I remember one time a number of years ago, I was down in Atlanta and I was listening to some local radio station, and they were, you know, went to the news at the top of the hour or whatever, the local news, and they were talking about, you know, there had been some sort of a major crash on the, you know, the freeway that goes, that makes a loop around Atlanta, Interstate 285, a couple of days before, and people were, you know, that they were all bickering and arguing, well, why wasn't this opened sooner? You know, this took, you know, people were trapped in the traffic for blah, 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 you know. Now, you know, and if you get trapped in traffic like that, you know, and let's say it's like one time, I can tell you know, this happened a few years ago. My parents were, you know, they usually go south for the winter. They take their motorhome down to South Texas, and then they'll drive back. They pull their car behind the motorhome, and so, you know, and then they just leave the motorhome down there and drive back for Christmas. Well, they, you know, this one year, I don't know, it's a few years ago, they drove back, and there was this ice storm that was going on. And once they got into kind of northwest Arkansas, there was, you know, it was an ice storm. And there was a crash on Interstate 540 of some sort, and the road was blocked. And so they were trapped in the traffic for, you know, trapped on that freeway for, I don't know, a number of hours. And it finally, the thing opened back, you know, it got up, they cleaned it up, and it opened the road back up, but it was kind of after a few hours, it starts to get a little bit critical, you know, especially in, you know, when it's cold, you know, because this was really bad weather, you know, it was cold, very cold, and there was this, it was either snow or ice, or it might have been a snowstorm, so it could have started to really get critical, and, you know, so there was some bickering that was going on. You know, why wasn't the highway department out there sooner? They knew this was going to happen. Why, you know, why did they just let this part of the road go? Because it's a very busy road, you know. But, you know, and then after that, they, you know, for a while, whenever it was even threatened with snow, they were out there with their snow plows, you know, ready to ready to do something. You'd see them kind of waiting for the inclement weather to come. So, but, you know, there's only so much, you know, even if they have all their plans in place, and there's only so much they can do. And sometimes people, if, you know, depending on the crash and, you know, how serious it is, you can end up with the road can be blocked and people do get trapped. And if somebody doesn't take charge, and in this case, obviously, they've made these crossovers ever so often. If nobody takes charge with that and implements the plan, you know, because it sounds like, oh, well, we can't do it by law. It can't be more than 10 kilometers or whatever. That sounds like somebody is, that's bureaucrat speak. You know, it's like, I don't want to take responsibility. It's not my responsibility. It's somebody else's. You know, CYA. Cover your ass. So, I don't know. It's, but, you know, what do? You know, you get trapped in a thing like that, and you're in there for a few hours, and you complain about it, and I don't know. Excuse me. But it sounds like what they need to do is add some lanes that would probably, you know, what it might do is if they would add some lanes, you know, like make it, you know, four lanes going each way, or maybe, hey, you know, why not five lanes? You know, if you got three lanes going each way, well, why not expand it? You know, because what that would do would make, if you know, because if it's really got a high accident rate right now, if they added lanes, that would lessen the you know, it would probably lessen the accident rate. If you kind of, you know, rather than trying to run a bunch of traffic down a, you know, road that may be too small, you know, increase the number of lanes. And that would probably help alleviate the situation, you know. And, of course, then you run into the problem, you know, businesses or people that that have houses along the sides of the road may not want to give up their land. And then you run into a whole new issue, you know, if depending on how much easement the road has and how much they can actually physically expand it without creating major dislocations for whatever's beside the freeway. And that turns into an issue as well. You know, you want to see how that works, go to New York City, or particularly New York City, or, you know, New Jersey, or any place like that where there have been people living for hundreds of years, and they get these roads established. And so you go into New Jersey or New York, and you've got all these roads, little roads running every which way. They were originally for horse and buggies, and then people build their houses, and, you know, a little narrow roadway, they build their houses, and then whenever it comes time to make the roads bigger, they really resist it. And you know, so you end up with some major roads, you know, but you go into New York City, and the freeway system in New York City is the pits, because in many cases it's just two lanes going each way, and it's very narrow. And of course, you're talking New York City, 8 million people, and a really crappy freeway. So it's just unbelievable. It's horrible. It's, you know, it's like, you know, that's the last place on earth you want to drive, is in, you know, like New York City. So, you know, and it was just because the thing kind of grew up, and they really didn't plan for, you know, at the time, they really, when they were building it, let's say 100 years ago or 150 years ago, they had no clue that the automobile was going to come along, and that they really should have planned a little bit better for wider streets, you know, leave room for, you know, traffic growth and stuff. And so, but, you know, in other cases, I mean, you go to Los Angeles and it's a different story, because, it, you know, that's a city that was really... you know, in the suburbs, it was really, you know, the automobile was already present, you know, when L.A. started sprawling, and so they really had to, they really planned for it. And so you've got this wonderful freeway system out there. It's just amazing. And the same way with a lot of other places, you know, but cities that have long been established, you know, it's kind of hard to retrofit them with a freeway, you know, without really causing, you know, major disruptions with people, you know, making them move, you know, give up their land. They don't like to do that. But, so I don't know. It sounds to me like if they would just add a single lane going each way and make it a four-lane road going each way, an eight-lane freeway, it would probably lessen the likelihood that you're going to have as many accidents, because it sounds like, you know, from the people they were interviewing, you know, they were just saying it's just really a terrible section. And then, of course, you know, that's the freeway, and trucks, in the modern world, trucks deliver a lot of freight, and so you're going to obviously you're going to have lots of trucks on there, and so, you know, and you can try to get people to leave more room, you know, because that's another thing. I really believe that a lot of accidents are caused, the majority of accidents are caused by people, you know, following too closely, you know, being in too big of a hurry, me first. They have this me first attitude, and that can cause problems. And then if you have, you know, the more traffic you try to pack into a road, the you know, any little thing that goes wrong, and it can quickly turn into a major problem or a major accident, major incident. And you know, so if you can kind of lessen that by adding lanes, then it really does reduce the likelihood that you're going to end up with a crash, you know, with a bunch of crashes. You know, you're still going to end up with some crashes, but it's going to kind of cut it back. You know, now what I've noticed, you know, and I think it's happening probably in a lot of Western countries, they're putting up these signs, you know, these traffic control signs, you know, where it'll say it, you know, normally it may give you some like missing child message or drive safely or whatever it is, but you know, they can control that. And then, you know, if there's an accident ahead, they can say there's an accident so many miles ahead, and you know, they can give you, you know, this variable messaging is what that's called. And you know, so those types of signs are appearing in a lot of different places. I'm noticing more and more of those. And sometimes, you know, they put up the big permanent ones, but sometimes what I've noticed in a lot of places, what they're doing, they'll just put up the little temporary thing, you know, like it's a little trailer that's got a messaging sign on it, and maybe they'll plug it in, you know, and it'll just be there. It might be, you know, have a little solar array so that it, you know, keeps the battery charged. And, you know, it might be a temporary thing, and then they can just kind of put it up there and let people kind of know, let people know what's happening ahead. But, you know, so, but a major, you know, that can only do so much. If you have a major crash, you know, you can kind of tell people, hey, there's a crash ahead. You know, you better seek an alternate route. Or it might say, let's say it says, you know, freeway closed, northbound at exit. You must exit on exit 12 or whatever. You have to get off here. And, of course, that creates its own problem, because the bulk of the traffic wants to get through that, they have to divert, and they have to go over to a two-lane road, and they may have to go through some stoplights or what have you. And that still creates a major bottleneck. And then, of course, you have if it's a really busy road, then you have the kind of almost like the accordion effect, where, you know, the traffic is starting to back up, and it keeps having to back up, you know. And you know, whenever I come to a slowdown or a stop, you know, of course, you know, one of the things I'm worried about is, what about this traffic behind me? Are they going to stop? And so I'll, you know, begin slowing down. Usually I'll turn on my, and if, especially if I have to hit the brakes, I will turn on my emergency flashers for a little bit, until there's you know, I'm sure the traffic behind me is slowing down and stopping. And then, you know, let's say it comes to a complete stop. Well, then once you're stopped, you're stopped. But the traffic behind is always, you know, there's always going to be a buildup, especially if the traffic is completely stopped. There's going to be this continuing buildup of traffic and people having to, you know, coming up to the part where it stopped, you know, as it moves back, and you know, that increases the likelihood that somebody's not going to stop in time. They're not, you know, somebody might, their attention might be diverted away, you know. And then that comes into following distance, because if you, you know, the more following distance you have, because you will, I don't care who you are, how good of a driver you are, you will have your, you know, find that your attention gets diverted away. You know, it just happens. We're human beings. We make mistakes. We're not perfect. And so therefore, you can mitigate a lot of problem, save yourself a lot of trouble by allowing a, you know, extra following distance and just staying back away from the other traffic. And then if you, you know, let's say you, your attention does get diverted, well, you know, since you've allowed the extra following distance, then, you know, you still have time to react if something happens, if the traffic slows down or whatever it is. And so, but if you're following too closely, then if something happens to the vehicle in front of you or vehicles immediately in front of you, you're probably going to be involved in that accident. And, you know, so if you stay back away, you know, if you possibly can, allow extra following distance, then that makes a big difference. Now, what happens, you know, with me, you know, like I'm in a truck and it's a really busy road and all of the vehicles are bunched up, what I do, I just actually, you know, I'll just slow down a little bit. Instead of trying to stay up with the flow of traffic, I'll actually slow down a little bit and force the other vehicles to pass me. And then, you know, they'll cut in front, even though I'm allowing the extra following distance. They're going to cut right in front because they can't stand to see that empty space. They'll cut in front. But if I'm slowed down, if I slow down a little bit and go 2 or 3 miles an hour less than they do, they'll go ahead and cut in front of me to fill that space up. But they're going faster than I am, and so therefore, if they hit their brakes, then that gives me a little bit extra margin of error. You know, of course, in a truck, you know, you have three times the stopping distance that the average car has. And so if I'm following a car really close and that car slams his brakes on, I'm running over it because my truck cannot... if it's a loaded truck, you know, it's got three times the stopping distance that the car has. And so, these people that, jump in front of a truck and nail their brakes are asking for major trouble, you know. So, you know, but, you know, I can mitigate that, you know, driving my truck, I can kind of mitigate that by just going slower and just, you know, taking it easy and make people pass me. You know, if they're in such a damn hurry, then they can pass. And but you know, if you have a really, really busy road, and especially with people darting in and out and trying to get ahead and zoom ahead, you will end up with some, you know, sooner or later you're going to end up with some accidents. And you can try to train people and get them to be safe and slow down and not be as aggressive and what have you. But really, probably what needs to happen in that case is, you know, the roadway gets widened, you know, extra lanes get added, and then it's more of a leisurely thing, and people aren't quite as aggressive. Because, I've noticed that, you get a really heavy traffic, and especially if it's in between two cities and it's fairly heavy traffic, people do tend to, or even in a city, people do tend to kind of get a little bit more aggressive than they would if it's just more of a leisurely thing, you know. And it's especially true if people are in a hurry, you know, hurry to get somewhere, and they just want to, I don't know. And then you have this phenomenon where people see a truck and they have to pass it, you know, and that happens a lot too.
So let's go on and we'll hear some reaction, and you'll also hear from some of the people involved. This audio from Radio 2UE here in Sydney, part of the Fairfax Group.
It's 11 minutes past 3. Now, if you're heading home up the F3 this afternoon, good luck, because that's all you're going to get from the state government and the bureaucrats at the Roads and Traffic Authority. Best wishes and better luck next time, because yesterday was a shambles. Simply inexcusable. Two trucks collided, Buzz, at 20 minutes to 12 yesterday morning. The motorway was a car park about 15 minutes later. And yet whoever was in charge of making a decision about getting that traffic moving north again bungled very, very badly. Hour after hour after hour went by, and nothing was done to switch on the contraflow system until 8:30 last night, 9 hours after the crash. Now, we spoke to Ken Boyes from the RTA at 4:25 yesterday afternoon. The crash happened at 11:40. We spoke to Ken Boyes at 4:25. Here's a little of what the RTA spokesman had to say to us.
We're at the mercy of the geographic location of those crossovers. Now, in this particular case, the nearest one is just north of the accident site. And, you know, there's a bit of sod's law sometimes with, you know, where these accidents actually occur. To get to that one, of course, it's a no-brainer that if we could get there, we wouldn't need it sort of thing. The one south is back over the other side of the Hawkesbury River in this case. Now, what we're doing is bringing traffic over the bridge, splitting the light vehicles off and putting them onto the old Pacific Highway. At this stage, the way they're doing it, it is keeping all the southbound traffic moving.
Yeah, but there's no southbound traffic coming into Sydney. Everybody's going north. It's peak hour.
Yeah, there is still quite a lot of southbound traffic.
But there's more going north because it's 4:30 on a Monday afternoon.
Yeah, setting up that, we believe, would actually take longer than the way we're doing it now.
You've got to be joking, Ken. There's been people in this traffic jam for 3 hours.
Yeah, look, they should have gotten through on, like, once they get around onto the old Pacific Highway and get to Mount White, it opens up, of course, beyond there.
Oh, my word it does, Ken. 9 hours after the accident, thousands and thousands and thousands of cars held up, and finally someone makes the decision that should have been obvious hours earlier. They've opened up a southbound lane and let northbound traffic get through. Now, the state government has spent, by its own admission, $28 million of our money, taxpayers' money, trialling the contraflow system on this very stretch of road. That trial began in 2008. Another trial took place in November last year. How many millions of dollars more must be spent by this mob before the system becomes operational? And who's responsible for the debacle? Now, the Minister for Roads and Transport, David Campbell, joined John and Sandy at breakfast this morning on 2UE. He admitted he knew all about what was happening. But what did he do to remedy the situation?
I was advised that there was an accident, and I was advised through the afternoon that the emergency service personnel on the ground and operationally decisions were taken that they thought they could clear the accident more quickly than turned out to be the case. As I say, to me, the common sense test was not met in the decision-making around when to put in place that contraflow, and there'll be some fur flying this morning.
Yes, later in the morning, Premier Christina Keneally joined Steve Liebman on 2UE. She was wringing her hands as well. Have a listen.
I am absolutely furious about what happened yesterday on the F3. It's unacceptable. This is simply hours of people's lives they won't get back. It's time they should have been getting home, whether it was to their children, to their work, to whatever they needed to get to, and it was completely unacceptable. I have spoken directly to the CEO of the RTA today.
Are you going to sack him?
Look, I'm not going to rush to some sort of snap judgment, particularly when I am extremely frustrated. I want the facts on what happened yesterday, and I've said to him, I want that as quickly as possible. He is briefing the minister as we speak.
Doesn't the buck stop with the minister?
Well, Steve, let's be clear. What we were dealing with yesterday was a situation where we had an accident, two trucks dealing with a significant amount of petrol. I think people understand that in those circumstances, it is appropriate that the emergency services personnel and the traffic management people make decisions about Steve, let me finish. How to deal with that situation safely. That being said, it is not appropriate to have kept people waiting for as long as they did without putting alternate traffic management plans in place.
Remember the minister told John and Sandy that fur was going to fly?
Oh, God, they're a waste of space, aren't they?
Fur was going to fly, said Mr. Campbell. We'll try pigs instead, because no one's to be held accountable, no one's being sacked. Here's David Campbell again from his news conference early this afternoon.
We sit down, we debrief, we kick some backsides, crunch some heads, and try and learn from this experience.
Didn't we do that last time?
And yes, that is the case. But, you know, as I say, I'm not in a position to explain it away fully. That detail I'm yet to get. I do express the frustration that I'm sure those drivers are expressing, and I give the undertaking to work through it, to crunch some heads, kick some tails, and to certainly work to get it improved, but always with the hope that you're not going to need to use it because you don't want to see an accident.
They think we're going to swallow all this crap. They seriously think we're going to swallow it.
Fair will fly.
She's just pathetic. And so is the Transport Minister. They really think we're stupid.
Mate, he should be charged with fraud. Honest to God, fraud. Matt, I mean, just incompetence on a massive scale. We have got an answer, though.
Got a huge answer.
We know somebody who can take control.
The fat controller was looking forward to hot buttered toast for tea at home. Suddenly, he heard an extraordinary noise. Fat controller came to see what was the matter.
I'm not going to in any way, shape or form try and explain away that, in my view, my common sense view, that this should have been sorted out earlier than it has.
Today, the fat controller and Lady Hat have a long journey. How can they start their long journey?
So what we do is we sit down, we debrief, we kick some backsides, crunch some heads, and try and learn from this experience. To me, the common sense test was not met in the decision-making around when to put in place that contra flow, and there'll be some fur flying this morning.
Problem identified. Fat controller acted at once.
We've moved quickly to put in place the contra flow once that advice changed. I'm not in a position to give you the detail other than to say my common sense tells me that it took too long today to make that decision.
Fat controller felt depressed.
I'm not in any way, shape or form satisfied with what's happened today. I will be sitting down and going over the process in fine detail. There'll be some fur flying this morning.
Fat controller felt depressed.
He did.
So did tens of thousands of motorists.
This is the Two Murrays. If you'd like to join us this afternoon at 19 after 3, our number is 13 13 32.
And, of course, the voice that you heard there underneath the Thomas the Tank Engine theme was the Transport Minister and also the Roads Minister, David Campbell, who is also responsible for me, basically, on the railways. And I'll just say here, personal opinion only, blah, blah, blah. If I was involved in an incident where, you know, I took half as long to, you know, get people off my train, I would be very sore today. I would not be able to sit down. I refuse to believe that, you know, they would let me do that particular situation where I would be, you know, for instance, stuck on a train and I would be expected to have my train rid of passengers a lot sooner than that particular incident occurred yesterday. Can you imagine if that incident had have occurred on a train for that amount of time yesterday? There would have been a riot. I am very surprised, actually, that there weren't punch-ups with people getting frustrated. But if you listen to some people, they didn't see anyone that they could basically punch onto. You know, anyone in authority like the police or the people from the Roads and Traffic Authority, people are very, very upset, and I can understand it. There's been many, many incidents where that has happened due to major accidents and also due to bushfires. Because the area where the F3 freeway, the Pacific Highway and the Main North Rail Line, they're in a very small, very tight corridor, and surrounded on both sides by a lot of bushland. So in summer, there have been occasions where there has been no way to get to the Central Coast in that particular narrow corridor. No trains, no F3, no Pacific Highway. And so you've got a long trip via boat to the Central Coast, or you've got a very long trip via Windsor and via Wiseman's Ferry, which you basically travel to the northwest for 60 kilometres, and then you have to travel further up to Wiseman's Ferry and then back across to the Central Coast. And so in that sort of occasion, you know, the train lines with bushfires have been closed, the roads have been closed as well, and there's basically been no way through. And so they've had major accidents up there before. We've had exercises to bring in this contraflow situation. We've had incidents where they've had major accidents, major bushfires. And no one seems to have learnt from it. And that is a bad mistake. And hopefully this time will be the final time. But, you know, I doubt it. I can understand the risk. Being involved with a fire service myself, I can understand the risk when you've got a motor vehicle accident, you've got all three northbound lanes blocked because you've got police, you've got fire, you've got ambulance, you've got rescue, and especially when there's a fuel tanker involved. I can understand that. But they had cars still coming southbound. Now, as a couple of people said, they rung the traffic management centre and they basically said, well, you know, can't we go up northbound? Because everyone on the Central Coast has seen all the roadworks and also some of them been delayed by those roadworks to put the contra flows in. And one of the operators apparently, and I say apparently, was worried at and mention the fuel risk from the tanker for the people going in the southbound lanes. And so they said, oh no, we can't have people travelling in the southbound lanes because of the risk of explosion. Well, they did have southbound lanes. As far as I'm aware, southbound lanes never closed. I could be wrong, but most of the news reports suggested that the southbound lanes did not close, it was just the northbound. There is a rather large space of land in between the northbound and the southbound. I'm sure that if the police and the fire brigade up there had a thought that there would have been an explosion risk on the southbound lanes as well, that they would have closed southbound lanes as well. So what would that have meant? That would have meant that everyone would have been up the Pacific Highway, and that would have been a very, very slow trip when you consider all of the cars, three lanes northbound, basically going into one. So let's hear a bit more from 2UE, and this comes from the morning show.
My mind goes back to January of 2007, more than 3 years ago. There were bushfires on the F3. At the time, there were people held up because of those bushfires. There were questions about the oppressive heat and what would happen if they were held there for a very long time. What sort of arrangements were in place to move them? And then it happened again the following year, and there was pressure and there was debate. Finally, the government relented and introduced, at great cost, this system of contraflows so that you could move the traffic, if it stuck, from one side of the F3 to the other.
Which it was yesterday, but the contraflow procedure wasn't even implemented until more than 6 hours later. Accident happened at around 20 to 12 in the morning. For some reason, though, no contraflow procedure in place until 8:30 last night. As a result, traffic backed up by as much as 10 kilometres for most of the afternoon and into the evening. If you have a look at the aerial shots on television, you'll see not only the F3 but the highway as well, both like car parks. Headlights on, but traffic not moving very fast at all.
I reckon there'd be a lot of people who watched TV news last night, and particularly the images, because it was all lit up. You could just see it. One side of the highway completely empty, the other side of the F3 jam-packed, the Pacific Highway jam-packed as well with lights. Would be astonished to hear this morning that contraflow thing was implemented at 8:30. 8:30 last night, when it could have been done much, much earlier in the day.
And it's not as though it hasn't been used before, as John has just said. Spend $28 million on the contraflow setup, seem unwilling to use it. We'll speak to the Transport Minister shortly, but first to the Leader of the Opposition, Barry O'Farrell. Good morning to you.
Morning, Sandy. Morning, John.
How would you assess yesterday's traffic dramas on the F3, Barry?
Well, a complete and utter debacle, and made worse by the fact, as you say, 2 years ago, $28 million spent for contraflow arrangements. This is a road that more than 70,000 motorists drive each way each day. And I would have thought, at the very least, David Campbell and David Campbell's office yesterday would have been completely focused on the peak hour that was approaching. And I would have expected that at mid-afternoon, if the RTA wasn't doing it of their own volition, David Campbell would have ordered the contraflow arrangements put in place. Because let's face it, even if they'd done that, and at 4 o'clock the accident was cleared up, who was inconvenienced? no one, because coming south at that time of day are very few people.
But who was in control, Barry? I seem to have heard the minister yesterday suggesting the RTA was to blame, but isn't the blame to be put at his doorstep?
Well, absolutely. Look, we've had three ministers since on the 1st of April 2008. And just remember that date, John. On the 1st of April 2008, Eric Roosendahl announced the $28 million spend to introduce the contra-flow arrangements. Ultimately, it's the RTA as an operation that does it. But why do we have governments? Why do we have a transport minister? Why does he have a dozen staff? It's to look after the public interest. He and his staff are as liable, if not more incompetent, than the RTA yesterday, because they, by mid-afternoon, should have realised we're about to have a huge traffic problem. We're about to see people on the Central Coast, Labor electorates on the Central Coast, the Lower Hunter, inconvenienced by this road being closed. Let's get onto it. But no, he was either out to lunch or asleep.
So are you suggesting that because there were three different ministers, that essentially this is the first time this has happened on David Campbell's watch, and they weren't aware of just how sensitive this was and what they should have been doing?
Well, the fact that they've had so many ministers in so many portfolios means that none of them get up to speed before the Ferris wheel starts again and they get another job. So that is a problem. But secondly, this is the same government. It's the same government, despite the latest salesperson, who's been in office for 15 years. These problems have been recurring regularly, and yet these incompetents never learn the lesson. And that's ultimately the problem. I've got to say to you, John, what do you think would have happened if this had been 2 weeks out from polling day? I have no doubt that Lights Camera No Action, Christina Keneally would have been out there ordering the contra flow to be put in place. Well, it shouldn't take an election. It shouldn't take that sort of approach to get these things done routinely. And if the RTA can't do them, or if the RTA is slow to do them, that's where the minister's office and the government are meant to stand up for the public interest. And the only people who were inconvenienced last night, the only people who continue to suffer because this government never learns from its mistakes, are the public of New South Wales, the motorists and the taxpayers.
Barry O'Farrell, thank you for your time.
And so you heard there from the opposition leader, Barry O'Farrell there. So very, very interesting to see what happens over the next couple of days. Will some fur fly after the F3 debacle? I'm not very confident that it will. Not very confident at all. I wonder what would happen. I read various comments there and heard various things this afternoon where, you know, people were spending 5, 6, maybe more hours in the traffic. There were people who just decided to give up, and they stayed in Sydney with relatives, friends, or in some cases even purchased hotel rooms. There was one report where a hotel tried to charge $500 for a room. So I wonder what would happen if everyone who got caught up in that decided to send an invoice for not only their time but their inconvenience and for things like hotel rooms and all of that sort of stuff. So it'll be interesting to see what happens, and hopefully there won't be a next time. But as I said, I'm not too confident on that one at all.
Okay, we went ahead and listened to the entire thing, and I actually looked in, I looked up in Google, and I typed in F3 truck crash, and I was able to see some news reports and pictures of it. And it actually looked like it was a portion where, the one picture I saw, there was a, like a really, where they've cut the mountain, they've cut a pretty good size of a mountain or a hill, and, to make way for the roadway. And so it's three lanes going one way, three lanes going the other. And, kind of around, the part, at least the picture I saw, it was kind of, that part, it just showed the traffic backed up, and it was kind of going around a curved section of the road. But, and then there's this other, and in that one, you can see the traffic's all backed up going north. And then there's just, kind of leisurely cars going along south. So apparently the southbound never did close. So, I don't know. It sounded the way those, the ministers of the transportation minister and all that sounded it's a typical bureaucrat stuff, you know, where they don't really want to, you know, it's not really their fault, and, you know, fur's going to fly, and... So, I don't know, that's kind of... But, you know, usually what happens, now in this case, I mean, this is a major road, and it's kind of the major route between Sydney and the central coast, and you know, that just, when that road gets cut off, it's cut off, and you know, and there's no really easy way to detour around it. Sounds like, I don't know, they either need to add some lanes, or another alternative would be to, you know, build a parallel road, or some sort of a relief road, or some sort of access roads. Now, that particular portion right there, you know, as I say, they've got a mountain cut where they really had to cut it, you know, cut into the hill in order to make room for the road. And that particular part, you know, it's kind of a bottleneck, and so if it gets blocked, it's really blocked. And, you know, but I'm wondering why it took them 12 hours to clean it up. You know, because it's one thing, you know, usually an accident, you know, they could, depending on, you know, the equipment that they have and what have you, you know, and of course they've got some pretty good techniques nowadays. Usually they clean accidents up pretty quickly, and the only reason that, you know, something would take longer would be if the roadway was damaged. You know, now in this case, I guess it did look like there was a fire, but... Even at that, I mean, you put the fire out, and if all of the fuel didn't, you know, if the fuel was still intact, or most of the fuel in the tanker truck was still intact, you bring another truck in, or, you know, you pump it out, and or you do whatever you have to do in order to remove it. Now, you know, so I don't know. It's but it's one of those things that happens, and, you know, what do you do? You know, I guess at the very least they could, you know, kind of bring a helicopter in and, you know, bring people some bottled water or something, you know, if they're going to have to sit there for up to 12, you know, 3, 4, 12 hours. Some of the people, you know, I heard 12 hours in some cases, and you know, some of the people were saying they were there for 3 or 4 hours. And, you know, that those kind of things happen. You know, because, you know, even in the very best, you can have the best plans of all and people really trying to be safe and what have you, and you still end up with mishaps. And you can have all kinds of plans in place, you know, what you're going to do for this and what you're going to do with that, and, you know, in case this happens, in case that happens. But sometimes things like that happen, and that... Really, to me, I mean, you know, when I, you know, you can have the plans and what have you, but that section of road is kind of unique in that it's of where, you know, because of where it's at, and it's just sort of, it sounded kind of like, and the pictures looked like it was kind of out in the middle of nowhere, well away from the city. Now, that may not be true, but that's kind of what it looked like, that it was, you know, kind of out in the middle of nowhere, at least the pictures that I saw. You know, they're kind of aerial pictures. And there's not, you know, where the accident happened, there's probably not a whole lot they could do. You know, and then the one guy described, well, the contraflow or the crossover was actually beyond where the accident happened, and so that obviously that kind of probably created a problem too. And then somebody at the scene probably decided, well, this isn't going to take that long to clean up, and then it turned out that it did take longer than it was, you know, that it was supposed to. Now, a lot of times what will happen, you know, and I've seen it happen a number of different times in different states, they will, you know, when a road is blocked like that, they will actually, partially get it unblocked, and then they'll allow, you know, maybe one lane of traffic to go, if they can. You know, they'll allow one lane of traffic to go, and then, you know, and of course it's going to take a while. If you got a big long backup, it's going to take a while, but you just kind of let those people go, and at least that gets it moving. And they may close the only time, you know, unless the thing is completely physically blocked, or they'll usually close the road. Let's say that there's been an accident, but the traffic's still moving, you know, in one lane. They will close the road at the point where they're actually, the wrecker's there, and they're actually removing, you know, pulling the vehicle up out of the ditch or whatever. They may close the road at that point. It just depends. You know, sometimes they'll wait until, you know, the most recent thing I was in, you know, that where I had to wait like that, I was on my way, this has been a few months ago, I was on my way to New York City, and the road, you know, it was in the middle of the night, the road was completely, the traffic was just completely stopped on Interstate 90, I think it was Interstate 95, I believe, going south into New York City. Completely stopped, and it was stopped for probably a good, as I remember, a good couple of hours. And then all of a sudden, you know, traffic just started moving, and so they had the whole thing just cleaned up, whatever it was. They cleaned the whole thing up, and then it all started moving again, going southbound. So there's a variety of ways that they can do it, but then again, they're limited by, you know, where it happens, you know, what's around, where it happens, and if it's kind of a, you know, if you think of the road, you know, in this case, it's kind of out, you know, it's sort of the corridor through maybe a kind of a mountainous area, you know, and it gets blocked, it's just blocked. And it sounds like that this road, you know, that there are different crashes that happen, and this is not something that has not happened before. And it's really something unique to the road. And so what can they do? Maybe make some alternatives, maybe add some lanes, which is obviously in this particular location might be a problem, you know, a big hassle to add lanes to it. Or, you know, make some sort of a, you know, come up with some kind of an alternative route, or, you know, if people are worried about the number of trucks on there, you know, make another road and just put all the cars on the other road. Or, you know, now what they've done, like for the New Jersey Turnpike, is interesting, because they've got, you know, in New Jersey, what they've done, they've added some, they almost look like, you know, in large sections of that, they almost look like service roads. And what they do, let's say there's a two-lane road that kind of is going right alongside the, you know, like the three-lane. You have three lanes going north, three lanes going south, normal freeway, and then they've added two lanes that are separated, you know, that kind of look like service roads along, you know, two lanes going north, two lanes going south. So you have a total of five lanes going north, five lanes going south, but all the trucks have to stay on, you know, on the right portion of the road. Now in Australia it would be reversed, it would have to be on the left. I would, you know, slower traffic would keep left instead of slower traffic keeping right. And so the only vehicles that are allowed on the, you know, in the center portion, the center three lanes going north, center three lanes going south, are cars. And so all the trucks in those sections, all the trucks are, you know, have to keep off on, you know, they have to keep right. And so that's one alternative, you know, because kind of when you mix cars with trucks, then you can end up with a problem sometimes, because people get in a hurry and what have you, and that can end up causing trouble. And, you know, now the stories I read, they really didn't seem to go into why the accident happened. You know, I don't know. They just, you know, they're all outraged about the road was closed. But it just, you know, they're not really saying how it happened or, you know, really what happened. So, yeah, they're just all, the stories I see, they're all just kind of complaining about the fact that it happened and that it caused extensive delays and thousands of motorists were trapped and so on and so forth. I don't know. But stuff happens. You know, and if you get caught in it, you're caught in it. But, you know, I think, you know, from my perspective, the more outrageous part is that the truck drivers were, you know, that were trapped in this, they were stuck in the traffic. And then, you know, once the road clears and then they're on their way again and then they get to the heavy truck inspection station or the weigh station, oh, you've been in your truck too long. You know, you didn't take a break. We're going to fine you. We need money. That's outrageous. So, we're at 90 minutes. Probably better be cutting this off. Hope everyone's having a great weekend. Hope you have, and yeah, it's still a weekend. Hope you're having a great weekend, and I will catch you later.
Remember, Trucker Tom is like Visa. He's everywhere you want to be.
Product reviews, restaurant reviews, photos, opinions, and more. Visit Trucker Tom's website at www.truckerphoto.com. You've been listening to Trucker Tom's podcast, and we'd love to hear what you have to say. All you have to do is send us an email to tom@truckerphoto.com.